For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
All right, well, today we're going to talk about this notion. I'm calling it complete fitness, the mind, the body, and the spirit, how this all comes together. And the reason I decided this would be a good topic to talk about, we're going to study this for 5 weeks, different issues. I was thinking, you know, as a physician and as sort of a pastor, I bring this kind of experience together and thought it might be good to share some of the insights that I've gained in working with people over the years, because what I've found is that a lot of people get stuck on this issue because we are really focused on bringing maybe the emotions and the body together. We realize the connection there, but then without the spiritual element, it's not complete. So I want to try to draw that out. Today we're going to talk about sort of what the current culture has to offer with this whole idea of a holistic life. I first got interested in this whole topic when I was an undergraduate student, and I was studying the what's called the placebo effect. That is when you give an agent to somebody, like you tell them it's a pain medicine, and they get the effect of the pain medicine even though it's just like a saltwater injection. And what's fascinating is that 33% of people given a saline injection get the same relief as people that receive morphine. Isn't that amazing? One-third of people get the same, and real pain. This is like post-traumatic, like they've had a leg amputated. And you give them a saline injection, a third of people will feel complete pain relief, just like you gave them morphine. So this connection between the mind and the body is really powerful. And I think it's something to think about. And so when we come to this and we think about total fitness, what's the goal? What's your goal? Well, most people think, well, they'd like to live longer. The main reason people exercise, that when surveyed, say it's to live longer. They want to feel better, get the aches and pains out. I think that's good. That's one of the main reasons I try to keep some semblance of fitness so I don't hurt so bad when I get up every day. I need more WD-40 or something. And finally, they'd like to be happy. Whatever that means to you, to have some sense of joy, peace, contentment, whatever it is. So these are good goals on one hand, and yet you realize there's sort of a limitation, isn't there? A longer life, well, life, I'm sorry to say, but it always ends, right? So no matter how much longer it's going to be, it's finite. And feeling better, it's good to feel better, but the bottom line is that as you get older, it seems like there are more aches and pains, and it's inevitable that things sort of wind down. And to be happy, there's always going to be problems too, right? I'm sorry if you came here thinking I was going to say everything is going to be beautiful now and all the problems are gone, but it's not that way, is it? So what life is, to be totally fit, to have a whole life, it means dealing with things as they come up, I think, more than avoiding things. And so when we turn to this issue, the mind, the body, and the spirit, my main premise is that to be complete, we need balance here. That the physical affects the mental and emotional affects the physical. But we can't be whole people without the spiritual, that there's spiritual life that we can have. Let me review a couple things here. First of all, this idea that our emotional state impacts our physical state. Now, here's the physical impact of depression and anxiety. In other words, people that have been depressed or have anxiety disorders, they found that they have increased risk of diabetes, cancer, chronic pain syndromes, chronic fatigue, obesity, and all the problems that come with that. Immune function, in other words, they've actually measured the molecular markers for immunity and found that people that are depressed or anxious actually are deficient. They can't fight off infections. Even HIV patients that are suffering from anxiety disorders have higher viral counts. In other words, they can't fight the virus off as well. Isn't that amazing? That there's this connection, this clear connection between the mind and the function physically. And heart disease, look at this. This is from the British Medical Journal. After an episode of major depression, the risk of myocardial infarction, that's a heart attack, increased fourfold to fivefold when other medical risk factors were controlled for. See what that's saying? That if you take everything else out of the equation and you just say, people that are depressed, how's that going to affect their heart? 4 to 5 times the heart attacks. And so the conclusion seems pretty clear in my mind, doesn't it to you? That our emotional state affects our physical well-being. Well, the converse is true too, that our physical state impacts our emotional state. People are more depressed that have had a stroke, for example, that have a neurological condition like multiple sclerosis, even hypertension, which is a so-called silent killer. It causes more incidence of depression, people that have hypertension, chronic inflammatory conditions, thyroid conditions. All of these things impact not just the sense of physical well-being, but objectively measured things like depression and anxiety. And so what we're saying here is that the mind and the body, the emotions and the physical, are connected. We could go on and on to make this case, but hopefully this is enough for now. And if you have questions, write them down too. I'll try to answer them as best I can. Now, here's the amazing thing. We say that science demonstrates this. We realize that the mind and the body are connected. Well, the Bible said this for thousands of years, for over 3,000 years. Here's writings from the Bible that are written around 1000 BC from the Psalms. Here's what David said. When I kept silent about my sin, my body wasted away. So this sense of angst that he had, guilt, that it burdened him and it had a physical impact. I think a lot of us have experienced this. The feelings of guilt and the sort of depression and anxiety that go with that can cause physical disorders. Another proverb says, pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. Proverbs 17, a joyful heart is good medicine, but a broken spirit dries up the bones. Wow. How about that? A joyful heart. We could prove that now. It's true. Proverbs 14, a peaceful heart leads to a healthy body. Jealousy is like cancer in the bones. Wow. A peaceful heart leads to a healthy body. You've experienced that, and we see it all the time. Jesus brought this together with this statement. Man shall not live on bread alone, but on every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. These are the words of Jesus. So you see what he's doing here. He says that man shall not live by bread alone. So there is physical. He needs bread. We need to meet our physical needs, but he says it's not enough. Okay? It's not enough just to meet the physical. That there's this spiritual element. And really, from the biblical perspective, it's kind of the foundation. But by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. What's he mean by that? Here's what he means. Is that God has revelation. He has something to say to each of us. He says that through his word. He speaks to us through his Holy Spirit. But he has truth for us. And he says that is what gives real life. Is knowing God's truth and living according to his truth. That's what makes life complete. Not by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. And so the biblical view is this, that our spiritual health impacts our emotional and physical well-being. So we can have what a lot of times we refer to as a holistic life, where the mind, the body, and the spirit are sort of in sync. With the spiritual life as the foundation. Now, this is a real popular notion today, isn't it? A holistic life. In fact, I went out and I Googled mind, body, and spirit. Guess how many hits? 13.8 million. 13.8 million hits. I didn't look at all of them. But a representative sight would be something like this: heal your mind, body, spirit, and soul. People finally are realizing that there is a supernatural part of life. There's part of life that you can't see that's real. Okay, and so they're trying to discover this. What is this unseen part of life? There's this sense that we all have that there's more to life than just eating bread. That there is a spiritual element. But how is it that we find that? And how do we allow that the spiritual part of life to have an impact on us and those around us? That's the big question. And that's what this kind of spirituality, this is what we would probably call New Age spirituality. And it's summed up in a statement like this, and she says this in her website, that we can consciously create our reality. You see what's being said here, that we can create our reality. Through the power of my mind, that I can change the world around me for my good. It's a very attractive premise, isn't it? And it's something that's drawn a lot of us in. Because you have control then, right? That you're at the center of this, that you can create your reality. And so the question we have to ask, is this true? If it's true, then we would want to do that, right? We would want to change reality because a lot of times reality is not the way we like it. We'd like to change things, make things better, make them the way we want them. And one of the most pervasive purveyors of this perspective, how's that for an alliteration, is this The Secret. And it's taking the Western world by storm. And many of you have heard of The Secret. Here's how popular it is. This is from this week's New York Times bestseller list, September 26th, hardcover advice section. The Secret, weeks on the list, 36. It's number one. Hardcover. $23.95. Here's the summary. The law of attraction as a key to getting what you want. So the idea here is that through the power of my thinking, I can change reality. I can create reality. I can get what I want. And that's what it's all about. That I get what I want. That I can change reality. In the video on Barnes & Noble's site, under their Mind, Body, and Spirit self-help section, number one, The Secret, extended version, $29.95. Okay, this is big stuff. So that's why I thought we should talk about it and see what it has to say. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to play you about a five-minute clip from The Secret that hopefully will give you a sense for the perspective that's being put forth here. Some of you have read this. Some of you probably have been impacted and even think that this is something that could help you. And so what I want to do today is look at this and then that we think through carefully. Is this something that could help us? Is it true? For those of us that may have a different worldview than put forth by The Secret, I think what we want to do is be respectful. I mean, some things you'd look at it and you'd think, oh, that seems maybe silly to me. Well, other people that believe in this perspective may think your beliefs are silly. So we're respectful. We think through, why is it that I don't agree with this or why is it that I agree with it? So let's think critically. Let's be respectful of other people's perspective. And so engage here for 5 minutes of The Secret, and then we'll come back and talk about it. All right, ready to play?
Do you know this secret gives you everything you want? Happiness, health, and wealth. You can have, do, or be anything you want.
We can have whatever it is that we choose. I don't care how big it is.
What kind of a house do you want to live in?
Do you want to be a millionaire?
What kind of a business do you want to have?
Do you want more success?
What do you really want?
I've seen many miracles take place in people's lives. Financial miracles, miracles of physical healing, mental healing, healing in relationships.
All of this happened because of knowing how to apply The Secret.
This is the great secret of life.
It's really important that you feel good, because this feeling good is what goes out as a signal into the universe and starts to attract more of itself to you. So the more you can feel good, the more you will attract the things that help you feel good, and it'll keep bringing you up higher and higher. Well, a lot of people ask me what their job is in the creative process and what the job of the universe is. So let's look at that for a moment.
Let's use this metaphor. If you think about Aladdin and his lamp, you've probably heard of that one. I mean, Aladdin picks up the lamp, he dusts it off, and out pops the genie. The genie always says one thing.
Your wish is my command.
If you trace the story back to its origins, you know, we now think that there's three wishes, but if you trace the story back to its origins, there's absolutely no limit whatsoever to the wishes. Think about that one. Now, let's take this metaphor and blow it out and apply it to you and your life. Remember, Aladdin is the one who always asks for what he wants. Then you've got the universe at large, which is this grand genie, and traditions, you know, have called it so many different things, your holy guardian angel, your higher self. I mean, we could put any label on it, and you choose the one that works best for you. But every tradition has told us there's something bigger than us. And the genie always says one thing.
Your wish is my command.
There is a creative process, a three-step process, and it's been around for 2,000 years. The first step is to ask. Make a command to the universe. Let the universe know what you want. The universe responds to your thoughts.
What do you really want? Sit down and write it out on a piece of paper. Write it in the present tense. You might begin by writing, I am so happy and grateful now that, and then explain how you want your life to be in every area.
And this is really fun. This is like having the universe as your catalog, and you flip through it and you go, well, I'd like to have this experience, and I'd like to have that product, and I'd like to have a person like that. It is you just placing your order with the universe. It's really that easy.
Step two is believe. Believe that it's already yours. Have what I love to call unwavering faith. Believing in the unseen.
Your wish is my command.
And the universe will start to rearrange itself to make it happen for you.
Most of us have never allowed ourselves to want what we truly want because we can't see how it's going to manifest.
If you do just a little research, it is going to become evident to you that anyone that ever accomplished anything did not know how they were going to do it. They only knew they were going to do it.
You don't need to know how it's going to come about. You don't need to know how the universe will rearrange itself.
You don't know how. It'll be shown to you. You will attract the way.
Most of the time when we don't see the things that we've requested, we get frustrated, we get disappointed, and we begin to become doubtful. The doubt brings about a feeling of disappointment. Recognize that feeling and replace it with a feeling of unwavering faith. I know, like I know, like I know, that it's on its way. Step three, and the final step in the process, is to receive. Begin to feel wonderful about it. Feel the way you will feel once it arrives. Feel it now.
And in this process, it's important to feel good, to be happy, because when you're feeling good, you're putting yourself in the frequency of what it is that you're wanting.
This is a feeling universe. So if you just intellectually believe something, but you have no corresponding feeling underneath that, you don't necessarily have enough power to manifest what you want in your life. You have to feel it.
All right. Well, there's a lot to think about there. It's you can see why this is a very attractive world view, that the universe is like a catalog and I can place my orders, that we ask, believe, receive. But the question that really comes to my mind then, do you think this will really help people? Do you think this is the answer to the ages and the problems that we have? A lot of people have believed that this might be it or something like it. So let's think carefully through a few questions. First of all, in this scenario, who controls the universe? I do, right? When I have a request, my request goes out to the universe, and what does the universe do? It rearranges itself to meet my request, okay? How many of us think we really have control over the universe? The universe seems to have a lot of control. I didn't have any control when I had a melanoma over that. You know, that was there. And thankfully it was detected and dealt with. A lot of us that have had things like that, you know, we don't really have much power over the universe. There's people that are struck by natural disasters. Not much control over that universe, is there? The universe is powerful. Seems like it operates outside of our control, doesn't it? It's part of the frustration. The other thing, for whose good are these requests being made? It's very self-centered, isn't it? It's all about my concerns. And the other thing that I'm really struck by in this is, what are the main concerns? The main concerns are of sort of middle, upper class Western people, aren't they? If you want your business to work better, if you want a bigger house, if you want to be a millionaire. These are all just kind of these self-centered middle class concerns of, frankly, people that could buy this book or video. And I think the thing that's most disturbing to me, and I hope you'll think about with me, is what about people who are really suffering? Okay, what about people that have a chronic disease, a terminal disease? What about people that are suffering in a developing country here's a mother whose child's dying of malaria. You're going to tell her your problem is that you didn't believe enough, or that you don't know the secret and this is being withheld from you? You think that's right? You think that's really going to help anybody? That's why I think we need to be able to look at things like this and critically evaluate it. Is this really helping people? In fact, people that have thought this through carefully, mental health professionals, here's what one said. We find about 10% of self-help books are rated by mental health professionals as damaging. This is probably one of them. The problem is the propensity for self-blame when it doesn't work. Of course. If it doesn't work, if you ask and you don't receive, whose fault is it? Whose fault is it? It's yours. Why? Because you didn't believe. You didn't have the force of will, or you didn't have the feeling. Remember the guy said, it's a feeling universe. You've got to believe with all your heart. And so I believe with all my heart and I don't receive. What's it mean? It's obvious. You didn't believe hard enough. It's not working. The secret's there. The universe wants to rearrange itself to meet your needs, but it doesn't. Why? Because you didn't believe. And so where's this leave? Where's this leave people? It leaves them defeated, depressed, because we realize the things that we're seeking in this kind of a mindset are things that never really fulfill anyway. That's the problem. The end they seek never fulfills. What about health? Okay, we say my requests are that I could be healthy, or my request is that I can be healed. I mean, are we saying this is a fountain of youth and that no one's gonna get sick or no one's gonna die anymore if they know the secret? I mean, that's what they'd have to say, because you put your request out to the universe, it rearranges itself to meet your request if you believe well enough. Well, then that means you're never gonna die. Come on. Let's be real. Let's think about this. Health always winds down. That's just the nature of health. So let's accept the reality. and not try to kid ourselves. What about wealth? If I put my request out to the universe and I do get, do you want to have a bigger house, they said. Is that really going to make a difference? Is that what's going to ultimately fulfill? Well, you know what they found? As people, psychologists, sociologists, people have researched this over the years, they've found time and time again that no matter what you have, once you've reached the basic levels, you have clothing, you have food, health care, and you have shelter, to have a bigger one and a better one makes absolutely no difference with happiness. In fact, the more wealthy often are less happy when studied in an objective way. In fact, one article I want to quote to you here, this is an article called Does Economic Growth, this is Personal Economic Growth, Improve Human Morale? Now let's think this through. Because what would our culture say? That if you have more, you're going to be happier, right? Here's what they found in their research over a long period of time. Diner's research confirms that those whose incomes have increased over a 10-year period are not happier than those whose income has not increased. Wealth that therefore seems is like health. Although its utter absence can breed misery, having it does not guarantee happiness. Happiness is less a matter of getting what we want than wanting what we have. Let that sink in. Are you working under an ideal that if I could only have this, then I'd feel good? If I could only have this level of security, or if I could have this thing, or if I could have this part of my house remodeled, or that addition built on, so now we can have a little more room, that's going to make me happy. Things are going to come into place then. Doesn't work that way. And you just think back. You know, think about when you were in college. For those of you who are in college, or before you started working, you're thinking, you know, you just sort of live on a shoestring, but you always think, once I get done with school and I'm making money and I've got a house and I've got a nice car, I'm going to really feel like I've got it made. Any of you ever feel that way? That's what I thought. And then what happens when you get the house and the car? Well, then you've got more problems to deal with, but it always seems like then it's like, well, there's always somebody that has a better one in there. And you think, well, you know, if I can get rid of this used car and get a new car, then my life will be together. If I can get out of this neighborhood and get into that neighborhood, then I'll feel good about myself. I'll feel like I've made it. Then what happens? Well, there's always some place else to climb. It's an insatiable appetite for more. And so, see, even if the secret could provide more to you, it's not going to ultimately fulfill. We find that again and again. The Bible says it, but as you study people, it's true. It's true. He goes on and he says, our human capacity for adaptation helps explain why, despite the elation of triumph and the anguish of tragedy, lottery winners and paraplegics usually return to their pre-existing happiness. Think about that. See what he's saying? Lottery winners. How many people are standing in line for the Powerball? A lot of them. Why? Why? Because they think, if I win the Powerball, my problems are over. I'm going to be happy. I'm going to have everything I want, and that's going to make my life good. How many people are standing in line for paraplegia? Nobody. I'm not. I wouldn't expect you to. Why? Because, you know, you think if you're paraplegic, your life's going to suck. It's going to be bad. Nothing's going to be good about that. And yet, scientists who research people find exactly this. Whether you win the lottery or you become paraplegic, you are going to return to your previous level of happiness. Why? Because happiness is not about your circumstances. Can I say that again? Happiness is not about your circumstances. It's about your heart. It's about your mind. It's your perspective on reality. And we keep thinking, if I could just change my circumstances, if I could just get these people away from me, this job, you know, these people are driving me crazy. If I was in a different department, you know, fill in the blank, change my circumstances. That's what will make it better. And he goes on, and he says, and it explains why material wants can prove insatiable. The possessor becomes possessed by accumulating ever more possessions. You see, and I think this, for many of us, should be kind of an alarm clock, a wake-up call. Think, has this been the pattern of my life? Have I, all along I've thought I've possessed these things, but the reality is they've possessed me. They've caused me to do things that in retrospect I wish I wouldn't have done. Relationships that I've left behind, family that I've never known, because I've been possessed by the ideal that having more is what's going to make my life complete. You see, that's why it's so good to study spiritual things. It wakes us up. It helps us realize, that's right. Can't I look at that and say that's false? To just pursue mindlessly what everyone else pursues, I don't want to do that. Let's look for an alternative way to live. And so when we look at the issues here, what we find is that having more doesn't bring happiness. So even if the secret could bring you the things you want, you'd remain unhappy. It's kind of a bummer, isn't it? Just think about that. If it was true, even if it was true, if you had the genie, and like he said, you know, the original documents on the genie said that there was unlimited requests that you could make of the genie. And even if that was true, you'd still be unhappy. Just like the Powerball $200 million winners. Almost to a person, if you go and interview them, they say they are less happy afterwards than they were before. Wow. Well, let's think of this life, this holistic life, the mind, the body, and the spirit coming together, the biblical alternative to this sort of self-help, an acquisition-oriented view of reality. And see what it has to say. Because from the biblical perspective, the mind, the body, and the spirit are connected, just like we demonstrated earlier from those ancient writings. But the goal is similar to what we might find if we think about it from the New Age perspective, what we call the abundant life. Here's what Jesus said. He said, I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. He says, have it to the full. So here's the issue, though. The issue is how we define the abundant life. Okay? From the perspective of kind of contemporary culture today, from those who would believe in the spirituality of the secret, what is the abundant life? Well, it's kind of defined by this idea of health and wealth. Those are the things that are going to make your life abundant. Okay? So as we come to the biblical perspective, here's what I think we need to think of when we think of the abundant life. That spiritual life is the foundation to living a truly abundant life. A life that's good. And see, what we find in like a New Age approach to spirituality is that we sort of work our way toward a spiritual life. But from the biblical perspective, the spiritual life is the foundation. It's the bedrock that we build everything else on. And it's not a secret. It's not a secret. It's something that God has put out there. And if you're here and you're kind of investigating spirituality, you're wondering what the Bible has to say, you see, that's because God draws people. Jesus said, when I'm lifted up, I'll draw all people to myself. And he does it in different times in our lives. But God, C.S. Lewis called him the hound from heaven. See, he's after you. Why? Because he loves you. He cares about you. He wants your life to be complete. He wants you to have the abundant life. See, and so it's not a secret that he's hiding or that you got to pay $29.95 to find out about. It's free, and he's initiating with you, okay? So it's the foundation, and it's based on this, a growing relationship with God. Two important words here. First, growing. Spirituality is dynamic. It's not something that just happens once and then you just go on about your life in the usual way. No, that what we have is the opportunity that our life changes in a real positive way, that God orchestrates, and yet he allows for us to decide how we respond to him. And that's what this passage is going to show, because it's this growing, but it's relationship. It's not that God is far off. Like we say, the secret is kind of far off. It's only those that can somehow find access to that. God's not far off. He's here. He's among us. He calls you. He speaks to you in ways that you've sensed at various times. And he wants that relationship to develop and grow. That's what this passage in Ephesians. This is from the writings of Paul. It's in the New Testament. And let's look at this carefully. He's praying for these people that he cares about. He says, I pray that from his glorious, unlimited resources, he will empower you with inner strength through his Spirit. Okay, let's think about that. This is what Paul is asking for the people that he cares about. And really, it's reflected to all of us. This is something that is accessible to each one of us. The unlimited resources of God. That sounds good, doesn't it? For what? It says that he will empower you with inner strength through his Spirit. You know, we need that. We feel weak. We feel like we need God's strength from time to time. Really, and the more we think about it, the more we realize that that time to time is every day, every moment. That our life would be better as we call on his power to strengthen us. Verse 17, he says, Then Christ will make his home in your hearts as you trust in him. Okay, this is the sentence I want you to really think about here. That Christ will make his home in your hearts as you trust in him. Because this is God's desire with each of you and for me, that he has this growing presence in our life. And you see, each of us is created by God to be in a deep personal relationship with him, for him to make his home in your heart. You see, and that's why despite trying everything, trying to acquire more things, trying to get ourselves in better shape, to deal with our emotional issues in life, it all seems to fall short because there's this spiritual part of us that God created you that way. And you feel empty because you are empty. You're empty of spiritual life apart from his presence. You see, but he's telling you that. He's not holding it back. He says, I want to make my home in your heart. But you see the next phrase here. It says, then Christ will make his home in your heart as you trust in him. Think about that real quick. What's that mean? What's that mean? Who has control here? You do. You can decide, I trust or I don't trust in him. You see, and that's the condition here. There is a condition. And yet God makes himself accessible and available to each of us. He wants to make his home in our heart, but we decide. We decide, do I open the door? And he even uses that metaphor in the book of Revelation. He says, I stand at the door and I knock. If anyone opens, I'll come into him. And I'll fellowship, I'll dine with him and him with me. And you see, this is the way he operates. It's pretty amazing. It's truly free will. You see, you decide, do I want him to make his home in my heart, or do I want to go on with things as they are? You know, and I'll tell you, folks, this is one thing that I'm so glad that God showed this to me, because I had gone on like so many of us, like so many of you. I'd grown up attending a church, but never understanding real, true spirituality, that I could have God present in my life. I think, you know, as a kid, I just wasn't into it. And I went away from it for a long time. But then at a certain point, I guess God began to stir in me. And I think the way he did that in my life, and I think you, a lot of you find that, is you become increasingly dissatisfied with the status quo. Or you start to see that I've tried these things and it's just not working. There must be more. You ever find yourself saying that? There must be something else. Because everything that everyone promised, this notoriety, this wealth, all these things, just didn't do it. Why? Because of this. He wants to make his heart, his home in your heart. And so this notion of opening to him is something that you do. You decide. And God offers this to each of us. Because the other thing that each of us sense is this alienation from God because we've done wrong. See, there's this moral thing in our lives. And that as we stand before God, we realize that if I had to stand before God and he were to judge me, that I would fall under his judgment. And sometimes I feel like, Jesus, why would God want me to feel that way? He wants you to feel that way because he wants to give you his forgiveness. See? That we feel guilty, again, because we are guilty. We feel empty because we are empty. And what it shows is a need. We have a need for a relationship with him. We have a need for forgiveness by the God of the universe. It's something you can have. In the book of Romans, it says, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. That means everybody. He doesn't grade on a curb or anything like that. It seems really hard on one hand, but it's beautiful on the other because that means that each of us, although under his judgment, fall under his mercy. His mercy that he wants to forgive. But it's personal. It's available to all, but available to those who receive it. As many as received him, he gave power to become the children of God, to those who believe in his name. So that's something he presents to you today. The opportunity to have this personal relationship with him that begins with receiving his forgiveness. You do that between you and God. Something you do sitting here, you say, God, I understand I need to be forgiven. I want to receive that forgiveness. I want to open the door of my life to you. I want you to come in. I realize finally, I've tried it long enough. I don't want to do it that way anymore. And he'll provide that for you. In fact, let's break here for a second. I want to pray. Lord, thank you that you provide grace like this, that you provide mercy to us, that you know that you created us this way because you love us and you want us to be in a personal relationship with you. So many of us, we've gone astray for so long for a variety of reasons, but now you're calling us back. So I pray for anyone who might sense that you're knocking on the heart, their heart, that even now might turn and say, God, I realize it here. I want to receive your forgiveness. I want to have a personal relationship with you. I open the door of my heart now. I pray, Lord, that that many might consider that. And those that are thinking about this now, that they might just say, hey, Lord, I want to find out. I want to figure out whether this is true or not. I want to be an honest and a person with integrity that will consider this very carefully. We know you answer those prayers, Lord. Amen. All right, well, you see, that's sort of a starting point that people can come to. But then look what it says if we go on in verse 8. Or at the end of verse 17, it says, your roots will grow down into God's love, and it'll keep you strong. Your roots will go down into his love. You know, our roots have to go into something. That's where we draw our nourishment from. It says, your roots can go down into his love. And that's what'll make you strong. It says, and may you have the power to understand, as all God's people should, how wide, how long, how high, and how deep his love is. May you experience the love of Christ, though it is too great to understand fully. Then you will be made complete with all the fullness of life and power that comes from God. That's what he wants for each of us, to have his power at work in our lives. So there's a growing personal relationship with God. But you know what? The other thing that's really important to realize about this abundant life is that it's meant to occur in growing relationships with others. And this, again, is a departure from the status quo of Western thinking. Because when we think about what a successful person looks like, they're independent. Okay? God made us as individuals. but to be individuals in a community where we help each other. We grow with each other. And that's exactly what he says in this other passage. This is in Colossians. He says, since God chose you to be the holy people he loves, you must clothe yourselves with tenderhearted mercy, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Make allowance for each other's faults and forgive anyone who offends you. Remember, the Lord forgave you, so you must forgive others. Above all, clothe yourselves with love, which binds us all together in perfect harmony. And let the peace that comes from God, from Christ, rule in your hearts. Isn't it true that one of the things that brings some of the most pain and angst in our lives are relationships that have failed? Think about it. You know, whether it's in your family, your workplace, those difficult relationships are the things that bring a lot of pain, aren't they? And you see, within God's community of people, what we can develop are really deep friends and friendships that sustain us. And that without these, that again, there's not a complete spirituality. We're not complete as a person. In Galatians 6, it says, share each other's burdens and in this way obey the law of Christ. You see, it's not that it's just me coming in to the church and expecting people to somehow figure out how to take care of me. No, it goes beyond that for good. That we help each other bear each other's burdens. And I think this has been really life-changing for me too. Because I had viewed life as successful life as being independent, whether that would be wealth, whether it would be that I didn't need people. People usually rip you off at some point or another, or they disappoint you. They don't come through, right? So it would be really good to not need them. Not worry about that. Get that off the table, and then you're happier, right? Well, it makes sense on one level, but it doesn't work out that way. Again, because we're designed by God to be in a community of people. In fact, when we get this opportunity to live in community, to bear each other's burdens, what happens is we get the opportunity then to be used by God to help other people in really important ways. And that makes our life really rich. Paul said it like this. In 1 Thessalonians, he says, after all, what gives us hope and joy? What will be our proud reward and crown as we stand before our Lord Jesus when he returns? It is you. Yes, you are our pride and joy. So he looks around, and there were a lot of things that he could have done with his life. He was a man of substantial power. And he gave that up to serve God in a different way. And as he looks around at his life, and he said, ask the question, like we're all going to ask one day, why did my life make a difference? Was my life a success or was my life a failure? You know, we all have to face that at some point, don't we? I think it's better to think ahead. How am I going to answer that question? My life was a success because, fill in the blank. He says, my life was a success, yes, and God commends it because of you. Because of you who I've had an impact. God's used me in a way in your life eternally. You are our pride and joy. And I'll tell you, I got to say that I've had a chance to do a lot of different things and accomplish certain things and have certain awards and that sort of thing in my life. And I'm sure a lot of us have. We've had disappointments too. But the thing that has given me the most joy is to look around at some of the people that God has allowed me to help and realize that I've had a significant impact in their life, to see their families change, their marriage change, to see new spiritual life come up, and to see that they've got a purpose for their life now, that the depression and anxiety has melted away and now there's a purpose, there's something to live for, and to know that God used me in a small way to impact that person, that gives joy. And that gives peace. It says, you are our pride and joy. All of us can do that. That's not reserved for a pastor. You see, that's the misconception that so many of us have. Well, that's okay for you. You're the pastor. I'm not. Each of us has the opportunity to help other people in this way and to have this kind of joy and peace. God has that for you. And so the abundant life, spiritual life, is the foundation of the abundant life. It comes through a growing relationship with God and in growing relationships with others, where we help each other and God uses us in that way. Thoreau said this: most men live lives of quiet desperation and go to their grave with their song still in them. It's kind of a depressing view of life, isn't it? Well, so what's he saying? Lives of quiet, in other words, they go through their lives quietly, desperate. Why would you do that? Well, because there's this gnawing sense that there must be something else. That's why most men live lives of quiet desperation. And they go to their grave with their song. In other words, they have this sense that life should be meaningful, that I should be able to do something with my life that makes a difference, that I should be able to look back and say, I'm satisfied. I lived a good life. He said, most men don't do that. And it's because they're missing this key element, the central element of life, the spiritual life. But it's no secret. God is drawing us. He's telling us. What I say is, think about it. Respond to Him. So complete fitness, the mind and the body and the spirit, this connection clearly exists. We're incomplete without the spiritual life. And God's goal for you is this abundant life, this spiritual life. So I'm going to close there. Now, over the next few weeks, we're going to talk about these issues. Sexuality, that should bring out a big crowd. Then we're going to talk about the emotional life, particularly about anxiety and depression and what the Bible has to say about that. Tom Dixon's going to talk about parenting and family life. And then we're going to talk about truth, that truth is kind of at the bedrock of all this. All right, let's pray. Lord, thank you so much that we can come in and really try to delve into topics that are really deep and that strike right at the core of how we look at our lives, what we're having faith in. Lord, help us explore, each of us, what we're putting our faith in. And some of us are here today that we are followers of yours, that we believe that you are real. And yet when it comes down to it, when we evaluate our lives, we realize we've been putting our heart and soul into other things. Things that aren't going to last. Things that aren't going to make a difference in the long run. Lord, for those of us that find ourselves in that position, Lord, you're just calling out with open arms. Calling back to you, to a simple devotion to you, to investing in a life that can make a difference with other people, to give ourselves away. Lord, we know that's what's going to make a difference in the long run. We thank you for that, Lord. I pray that over the next few weeks here that we would be able to come together and think carefully through these issues so that we'll allow you to make a difference in our lives. Amen.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.